Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna. Continuing in the sixth canto, the ninth chapter, and today we're reading text 8 and text 9, because 8 didn't have a purport, but I'm also going to add text 10. And we're discussing the appearance of the demon Vratasura. So we're chanting, I think, on the book. Was it text 8 on the board? Okay, word by word. Turiyam. 1/4. Cheda. Although being cut. Virohena. Of growing again. Varena. Because of the benediction. Jagrihu. Accepted. Drumha. The trees. Tisham. Of them. Niryasarupena. By the liquid oozing from the trees. Brahmahatya. The reaction for killing a Brahmana. Pradyusyate. Turiyam cheda virohena. Turiyam cheda virohena. Turiyam cheda virohena. Varena jagur durmaha. Varena jagur durmaha. Varena jagur durmaha. Tisham niryasarupena. Tisham niryasarupena. Tisham niryasarupena. Brahma hatya pradisyate. Brahma hatya pradisyate. Brahma hatya pradisyate. Turiyam cheda virohena. Varena jagru durmaha. Tesham niryasarupena. Brahma hatya pradisyate. Turiyam cheda virohena. Varena jagur durmaha. Tesham niryasarupena. Brahma hatya pradisyate.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. In return for Indra's benediction that their branches and twigs would grow back when trimmed, the trees accepted 1/4 of the reactions for killing a brahmana. These reactions are visible in the flowing of sap from trees, and therefore one is forbidden to drink this sap. What's being discussed here is how, just so we understand what's the situation, is that Indra had killed the brahmana, so he spent a year in repentance. Said he accepted the burden of the reactions with folded palms. So then, after 1 year of purifying himself, he must have had a handful of all his sinful reactions, so he didn't want to keep it on himself, so he very kindly, I say that with a question mark, distributed it around. So, I mean, naturally, if somebody hands you their sinful reactions, you probably aren't so glad. That's why we don't like people to touch our feet, because basically they're dumping their sinful activities on our feet. So here we have Indra, who has performed some sinful activity, and on one hand, he's accepted that sin, you know, the reactions, but now he's trying to get free of them. So yesterday it was explained how the ditches of the earth would automatically be refilled, and in return for that benediction, the land accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. And then it was explained, and because of this, there is now desert spots all over the surface of the earth. So in continuing with this situation, describing how Indra freed himself of the burden of the reactions for the sin of killing a brahmana, we're onto this particular situation where the trees have agreed to provide their limbs, the branches, the leaves, and in doing so, these appendages would grow back. Just like the branches of the trees are like the arms of the trees. But, you know, if we cut off one of our arms, it's finished. It's gone. But the trees have that benediction that they can regrow. And another branch will grow again. So now we come to text 9. And text 9 is one of these very straightforward situations describing the plight of women. And there, I will just read the Sanskrit. Sashat kama varenam hasturiyam jahur sthiyaha ajorupena tasva salamo mashi mashi pradishyate. In return for Indra's benediction, that they would be able to enjoy lusty desires continuously, even during pregnancy, for as long as sex is not injurious to the embryo, women accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. As a result of these reactions, women manifest the signs of menstruation every month. Purport. Women as a class are very lusty, and apparently their continuous lusty desires are never satisfied. In return for Lord Indra's benediction that there would be no cessation to their lusty desires, women accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions for killing a brahmana. And I'm going to read the next one that we can finish these four. 1/4, 1/4, 1/4. Dravya bhuya varanapas turiyam jagrur malam tashu bhadbuddha finavyam tristam tadarate shapam. In return for King Indra's benediction that water would be in, that water would increase the volume of other substances with which it was mixed, water accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. Therefore, there are bubbles and foam in water. When one collects water, these should be avoided. Purport. If water is mixed with milk, fruit juice, or other substances, it increases their volume, and no one can understand which has increased. In return for their benediction, water accepted 1/4 of Indra's sinful reactions. These sinful reactions are visible in foam and bubbles, and therefore one should avoid foam and bubbles while collecting drinking water. So we can repeat number 8. In return for Indra's benediction, that their branches and twigs would grow back when trimmed, the trees accepted 1/4 the reactions for killing a brahmana. These reactions are visible in the flowing of sap from trees. Therefore, one is forbidden to drink this sap. Om Agyante Mirandasya Vyanana Shakaya Chaktu Militam Dena Tasmi Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna. I was looking to see what Prabhupada might have had to say about the particular verse that I was supposed to speak on, number 9. And basically, what he had to say was in the purport. So I was looking up Indra before my computer crashed, and I couldn't look up anything else. Krishna's mercy, I suppose. But that was this morning. So I saw there wasn't so many hits even on Indra. He was just basically, it was maybe about 25 things, and most of them were the same, repeated at different times. Yesterday, a devotee who was giving class, I don't know his name, but he gave a wonderful class and a very wonderful perspective on the situation. And he was mentioning Indra's very high exalted status, and at the same time, all the things that would kind of contradictorily occur in Indra's life, and the different troubles he would apparently get into, and he was kind of questioning that. And Prabhupada actually kind of dismissed in several instances, kind of dismissed that as, indirectly dismissed it as kind of irrelevant that Indra was this big king, because just like Prabhupada would say, from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, so he'd mention, from Lord Indra down to Indra Gop, and then he explained this Indra Gop is just a little bacteria. You have to look at it with a microscope. You can't even see it. It's called, in some of the discussions, he used the word insect. But technically, it's a bacteria, which is actually even invisible. It's called this Indra Gop. So from Indra, big, powerful king, down to this little bacteria, what is the similarity? The similarity that everyone has to suffer or enjoy according to their karma. Because this Indra is a post, and that post is exalted post. There are some qualifications, obviously, to get that post. And even sometimes there's nobody who's even qualified to accept the post. So in different occasions, like Lord Brahma has intervened and he's acted as Indra. One time when Lord Indra was in a particular condition and he was put into the body of a hog. So here could be, one of those incidents, from the king. You're sitting there, you're getting fanned, people are putting food in your mouth for you, all your needs are being met, the Gandharvas are singing, and the damsels, the heavenly damsels are there at your beck and call, And suddenly, due to some inadvertent type of desire, he's just put into this body of a hog. And the beauty of being in these different bodies is that we forget all about our previous body. If, you know, this is when Krishna says that I am forgetfulness. Prabhupada explained this, forgetfulness is Krishna's mercy. Because if we could remember everything, he said, if you could remember being born, if you could remember being in the womb of the mother and then exiting the womb, that pain would just be too excruciating. So Krishna, he gives this benediction, forget, forget. If you could remember being a hog eating stool, you could not bear to even, you know, tolerate this life. Just to think like that, you know. Even we don't remember when we're a little child, we see all these cute little kids jumping around the temple laughing. And, you know, at the same time, you know, their bodies aren't functioning fully yet, so their urine and stool comes automatically at any time, you know, without control, and they're walking around having to wear these dirty clothing. And, you know, it's one of those kind of type of thing. You don't want to have to remember that, you know. And but we all went through it. So Indra, there he is in the body, this hog body. And because he has to be in the body of a hog, he's forgotten that actually he's King Indra. Now, if he would remember he was King Indra, it would be really difficult to just enjoy that stool, you know. Would just be kind of hard to do. So full benediction, okay, forget your Indra and just enjoy being a hog. And he really did. He got totally into being a hog, and he got a hog wife. And, I mean, you know, only another hog could appreciate the beauty of, you know, of another hog. Most of us, when we see those hogs are in Vrindavan, we kind of, you know, okay, spirit, soul, but we just take a wide path. But the hogs, oh, they just go right up to each other and, you know, all kinds of interactions go on. So there is Indra in full hog life. And he has little hog children, you know, and he's just in hog heaven. Actually, in America, there's a motorcycle gang, and this motorcycle gang is called the Hells Angels. And they call the bikes, they ride this motorcycle called Harley Davidson. And a kind of like a slang, you know, a nickname for this type of motorcycle, they call them hogs. So they have a motto, hog heaven. When they're on their motorcycle, the hog, they're in heaven. So hog heaven. So there was, you know, Indra in his real hog heaven with his hog wife, his hog children, all the stool he could eat. And meanwhile, Brahma is like, fed up, I'm up here doing your work, you're down there. But he comes down, okay, Indra, you've had enough, come back. And he's looking with, you know, bewilderment, come back, I've got my wife, I've got my children, I've got my stool, you know. And we're laughing at this. It's actually, you know, it's not a joke, because in so many ways, each one of us go to hog heaven. We understand that something is very nasty. We understand something is contrary to our Krishna consciousness development. But we get attached, just like Indra's position? He was attached, just that. So we get attached to some situation, you know, whether it is our job, our wife, our children, our husbands, you know, whatever it is, we become attached. And in that attachment, when Krishna becomes minimized, then we become bewildered. When we become bewildered, we lose our memory. If somebody tries to take away the object of your attachment, there's anxiety. Hey, wait a minute. No, that belongs to me. You know, a little kid, you will see, that will pick up some, you know, really nasty thing from the street. And the mother wants to get it as soon as possible, just grab it away from the kid. It's something really nasty, you know, like you'll take 10 baths and you won't feel clean. Mother's trying to take it, and the kid's screaming, no, you know, because that attachment is there. From beginning from, you know, your very birth, you get attached. as a baby, you're just attached to the mother's breast, and then, you know, so many other attachments develop. So that was the condition. Indra, even though he's in this very exalted position, he has the tendency, like every other conditioned soul, to commit mistakes. He has the tendency to become illusioned. So sometimes it's easy to kind of wave off the demigods, you know, oh Brahma, oh Indra, you know, but they're very exalted personalities. And the point here is to look at this objectively. If that person who actually is a very exalted personality can get into such a decrepit, embarrassing condition of life, what about ourselves? What lifetime have we forgotten? What have we forgotten even in this own lifetime? Before we came in the door of the temple and put our heads at Srila Prabhupada's feet, what were our activities? You know, of course, many of you were very fortunate. You were born in pious families, and therefore you were sheltered from the lower modes and the activities that go along with that. But, you know, I have talked to many devotees here in India and here in Bombay, and they've told me, frankly, before they took to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees, they were doing practically everything that all of us did at our time, you know, drugs, sex, eating meat, everything, you know. So now when they look back at that, they're feeling just this pain in their heart, you know. What, you know, how is it we could do these things? We can't imagine. If somebody gave us a, you know, piece of meat now, we would just pull back. We would just, you know, be feeling great disgust. And at one point, whether in this life or a previous life, we would have accepted these things. Oh, very nice, very nice. You know. So here we have Indra's example. I mean, Indra was also, he had this, you know, tendency to become full, we say in English, full of themselves. You know, when somebody starts becoming very proud of their possession, Prabhupada would often use the quote, a pauper is even proud of his penny. Pauper means he has nothing. Somehow he finds a penny, you know, a paisa in the street. Suddenly he's feeling, oh, I have something here. And he's going to defend it, even though it has no value. In America, I mean, in India, you have what we couldn't call homelessness, but it's not an issue because it's not seen in the same way. But in America and Europe, homeless people are a big problem because what do you do about them? You know, having people just living on the street. Of course, when you come to India, it's a normal sight. But in America, there they are, these people living on the street. And one thing they have in common, they all have a great big black plastic bag. And in that big plastic bag, whatever they own is in that plastic bag. Normally, this plastic bag, these big black bags, they are used for rubbish. And if you look at, if you find a black bag that's, you know, from one of these people, if you look inside, it's rubbish, you know, because they're on the street. So they're picking up whatever they can find on the street. They don't have, you know, they have no other means. And it becomes very valuable to them. It's something you have thrown away. But for them, it becomes some value. They put it in their bag. They hold on to it. And if another person, homeless person, comes to tamper with their bag, immediately there's a fight. You know, so even the pauper is proud of his penny. You know, so Indra, what to speak of someone like Indra, who has so much wealth, so many personalities at his beck and call, so much power, you know, and then he forgets. There's, you know, he's thinking, I'm the end all, I'm the be all and the end all. Just like I'm sitting up here a little foolishly speaking to all of you, if I started to think for some one moment that actually I had something more to say and that you people were actually, you know, inferior to me, I mean, believe me, I don't think that way. I'm looking at you thinking I'm like a foolish person with my mouth moving. All of you have so much more Krishna consciousness and so much more wonderful experience in serving Guru and Krishna. But Indra, he is thinking, you know, oh, well, you know, who are these people? And then he's so foolish, he sees Krishna. He's thinking he's just a stupid little cowherd boy. What is this foolish little cowherd boy? Now, the other people, they're not looking at Krishna. They're also seeing Krishna as a cowherd boy, but they're not envious of Krishna. They're not thinking, oh, this cowherd boy, he's trying to impede the progress of my happiness. So when Krishna took the position to stop the fire, the sacrifices that were intended for Indra, instead of seeing, oh, he's curbing my pride, he's actually helping me like this, he became angry. And he not only was he angry at Krishna, he was angry at everyone because they were supporting Krishna. You know, if you get angry at, you know, maybe you have some friend or some acquaintance and there's some quarrel, so okay, you're mad at that person. And anybody who takes side or remains a friend with that person, oh, you're also angry with them. This is the, you know, the mundane mentality. So either you're my friend or you're not my friend. So anybody who was accepting Krishna's advice, don't worship Indra, immediately Indra saw those people as his enemy. So he was just determined, I'm going to wipe these people out. And he called forth this, you know, huge cloud and just started pouring water and pouring water and pouring water. I think last year, or was it the year before in Bombay, you had a big flood, isn't it? So much water was like coming, and you were all helpless. People were actually dying. Even if we were hearing about this in the West, you know, and our phones were ringing. Some devotees in New Vrindavan, their parents and their family was in Bombay, so they were completely in anxiety. You know, is my mother and my father all right? One devotee, his father, was missing for a few days because he was stranded and there was no way to make a telephone call, so nobody knew. It turned out okay, but, you know, you didn't know. So much anxiety. So Indra, you know, he has his temper tantrums. He throws his rain. So what happened, of course, we all know the story. You know, Krishna just picks up Govardhan. Everybody, nobody said, hey, stop Indra. They came to Krishna. Krishna, save us. I mean, this is the mood of a devotee. You know, Krishna, save us. They weren't even thinking about this foolish Indra and his forgetful behavior. So Krishna's lifting up this hill, and, you know, this is, and you know that if somebody does something that you don't like and they persist, you get even more angry at them. I mean, a mundane material person would. Hopefully, devotees, we won't get so upset. But, yeah, just like yesterday, I was in the car, and the driver asked the one scooterwala to move a little bit more forward. And the scooterwala, you know, king of his scooter, what? You're speaking to me? I mean, it was all in Hindi, but you could just see by the, you know, what? And then the driver, she's, yeah, you go. And they were just like, you know, what for? You know, for a few inches of pavement that nobody owns, you know. We're in our car. We don't own the pavement. That guy's on his scooter. He doesn't own the pavement, you know. But he's they're having a, you know, foolish fight. So this is the nature of the forgetful living entity. So Indra, when he sees that, oh, that's little cowherd boy, now he's pulled up the hill. And he kept, you know, going for 7 days. And finally, you know, it dawned on him, wait a minute, that isn't an ordinary cowherd boy. Something's, you know, it dawned on him. He woke up. His head was at Krishna's feet. And then, of course, you know, beautiful prayers of Lord Indra. We glorify these prayers. You know, in fact, it said we should recite these prayers daily. So, on, you know, the one hand, we're seeing, you know, we're kind of seeing Indra as a buffoon. He forgets, he becomes a pig. He tries to kill Krishna and the cowherd boys. Here he killed a brahmana. You know, what kind of fellow was this? But when Indra comes to his senses, then we see really what kind of person Indra is. And the beautiful prayers of Indra and glorification of Lord Krishna reveal the content of his true character. On another occasion, he fought with Krishna. You know, it was mentioned yesterday. Krishna was taking the Parijat tree to Satyabhama. Not just, you know, a flower. He's taking the whole tree. Hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. You know? And you know, so they had some argument again. Then he would wait. You know, he would get covered over. Wait, you can't do that. And the fighting, and then suddenly he realizes, oh, sorry, you know. And similarly, after Hiranyakashipu was defeated, as is the custom in these situations, that, you know, you go and you can plunder the wealth of the defeated party, take their the women and all. He went and he took Kayadu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, who was pregnant at the time with Sri Prahlad, who's taking her away. And Narada Muni comes and says, wait a minute, this isn't right. He goes, no, you don't know. She's pregnant, and it's the son of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu may be gone, but, you know, his son is in the womb, and no, you don't understand. So because it was Narada Muni, Indra had the good fortune at that point. He condescended, and he gave Kayadu's care over to Narada Muni. And, of course, you know, the result is that was Sri Prahlad heard all the teachings of the Bhagavatam while in the womb of his mother. But at least in that case, Indra was behaving in a proper, you know, he accepted. So in this situation here, you know, there's some give and take. He accepted the responsibility for his sinful reactions, but now he wants to distribute them. So, of course, this planet, we live in the planet Earth, and it's a material planet. And we can't expect things to be perfect here. You know, you can just see how, I mean, even I come every time I'm coming now for the last few years, there's some construction going on at the temple. You know, we got to make it better. And you go in the street, and there's a ditch being dug here. There's a building being torn down there. We're constantly trying to improve our conditions. But so long as we remain in this particular world, there is no hope of improvement. The only improvement will come from within. And by that improvement, by that process of Krishna consciousness, of practicing bhakti yoga and purifying one's own consciousness, we can actually completely get out of this place rather than get a better address. You know, sometimes people, they have a, you know, you start out in life and you don't have much, you work hard, and finally, you know, you get a better house and a better car and a better house, a better car, and you feel like, you know, I've accomplished something. But in the end, the better car breaks down, the better house falls apart, and so do you. Your body gets old, the teeth fall out, you know, the whole things. So how can we avoid these? You know, it's frustrating. How do we avoid? And we avoid this by taking seriously to our spiritual life and not becoming so concerned with the activities of the material world, whether this happened for whatever reason, why or not, but to just be concerned about the activities of serving Krishna. One thing I'm going to make, you know, so Prabhupada didn't make too much comments here, so I can take that as a hint. We don't have so much, as, you know, it's not so important, these particular passages. Just it's a historical reference in this respect. Our main business is to remember Krishna. But when it is said here, women are as a class are very lusty, and apparently their continuous lusty desires are never satisfied. So a lot of times this is used to point out, you know, well, you women. You know, first of all, if we were intelligent, we would have probably not accepted this trade-off. You know, it said that the women accepted the benediction. It said they'd be able to enjoy lusty desires. So if they'd been a little more intelligent, they would have realized this is not a really good benediction. But, you know, being less intelligent women, we took it on. But one thing is, considering this here, that women are very lusty and their desires are never satisfied. That's in the material concept. But for devotee ladies, these lusty desires are purified and they become Krishna Prem. So then they have unlimited Krishna Prem. So actually what looks, you know, in one hand it's a benediction, but it's a very questionable benediction that, you know, they can have as much sex as they want. It says their lusty desires. still, it's a curse. It's a curse in the form of a benediction. But for devotees, all of that is neutralized because their activities are aimed at one, pleasing Guru and Krishna. And in this way, the lust becomes Krishna Prem. Because lust, it is actually coming, you know, it is the material manifestation of the spiritual substance. So the natural condition of the living entity is one of purity. That's the natural condition. So what's being described here is the unnatural condition, the unhealthy condition. You know. So we should be very much eager to get healthy. You know, should not be so attached to our diseased condition. And in this way, we don't have to be affected by these curses and benedictions. One other small comment here about some people have read this about the foam and bubbles in the water, so they are questioning, well, does that mean we shouldn't drink carbonated drinks? I've been asked that before. So if you read this carefully, though, it says, when one collects drinking water, avoid the foam and bubbles. Well, why? Because these foam and bubbles in a body of water indicate impurity. You know, if we see, you know, like, unfortunately, even you go to the holy places and you go to the different Kuns and the Jamuna River, and then around the shore you'll be bubbles and foam because so many impurities have been dumped into these bodies of water. So that's not the same thing as, you know, taking a carbonated drink, which, not that we go around and drink soft drinks, we don't, but, you know, just to distinguish what's being discussed here. So it says, Prabhupada points out, therefore one should avoid foam and bubbles while collecting drinking water, you know. So I just heard this morning that it was Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day, and unfortunately my calendar is for the west, the other half of the world, and somehow the days in India, they're different. So for example, Nityananda's appearance day, which was yesterday, it was the day before in America. So my calendar, it looks, you know, it had a different day. So I thought, well, good, I have some notes on Narottam Das. It's on my computer. I'll just go open it up and read those notes. But then I had a problem with the computer, and the computer's not working. So I was thinking, so much for that. You know, we think we have all this wonderful convenience at our hands, but immediately it's removed. But anyway, most of us know how Narottam was born in a very pious and also wealthy family. And his parents were very overjoyed by his appearance. He was a beloved child. He was beloved in his kingdom. But he had no interest in the wealth in his surroundings. So it's another one of these stories where he's just always agitated by the situation. And there was one Brahmana who was a member of his father's entourage who told him about Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So by hearing about Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he became full of attachment for him. And it became his desire, his only desire, to be united with Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And he was very restless in this way, trying to get away from the family situation. And, you know, so then the family was going through all these different turmoils of trying to keep him there. You know, let's get him the classic solution, let's get him a beautiful young wife. I don't know, if that's happened to any of you. I don't know, like when you joined the temple where your parents were not so happy, and maybe they were thinking, oh, well, we'll get you a beautiful wife, you know. So none of this was working, of course. And eventually he was actually able to get away from that situation. Lord Chaitanya had indicated that Narottam would appear. He gave an indication by telling, he actually told his followers that a personality named Narottam would appear, and he explained how that would happen. And he instructed Lokanath to initiate Narottam. So he was eventually initiated by Lokanath, although it wasn't instantaneous. Lokanath was not inclined for taking disciples. And Narottam arrived in Vrindavan in a very happy to be there, but very humble mood. And when he was last taken to Lokanath, Lokanath didn't show an interest in initiating him. So Narottam began doing very menial service. And this menial service was that he was clearing the place where Lokanath was passing. With his hands, he would go and he would clean this place. So then at one point it was, discovered. And so he accepted because he could see that even though he may have come as a prince, in this lifetime, the humility in his heart was very compelling. So he was initiated by Lokanath, and then he was given instruction by Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami was very, very affectionate upon him, and he gave him the title Thakur Mahasaya, because he learned very quickly. Everything that he was taught, he immediately was learning very quickly. And he was also getting a lot of mercy from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So he was very close to Srinivas. Both Srinivas, Narottam, and then Shamananda, they were taking their teaching, their instructions from Jiva Goswami. But he had a very close relationship with Srinivas. And they would sometimes wander here and there in Braj. One time they went to Govardhan, and together they were going near some cave, and they heard a beautiful, beautiful sound of a flute. And as they came closer to that cave, they smelled a very, very extraordinary aroma. It was actually Krishna, but they didn't really know that. And they became overcome. It was described they were tottering backwards. They lost their balance. They were tottering back and back, and then they swooned. They fainted. And when they came to their external senses, standing over them was this beautiful cowherd boy, with a flute and a stick in his hand, and he was just looking at them, and he had a turban on. So Srinivas said, "Who are you? Where have you come from?" And he just said, "I have come to protect you. There are many dangers here, and we cowherd boys, we know them all. So now that you're all right," he says, "my anxiety is relieved," and he immediately left. And as soon as he left, the two of them were just struck with this intense feeling of just, what's happened? Where has he gone? What have we just come across? And they spent the rest of the day sitting under a tree discussing this incident. And they started feeling very, very much perturbed by, where has this person gone? Who was this person? And in the evening, they fell asleep. And when they fell asleep, both of them had a wonderful dream. And in the dream, Krishna came with his darkish rain cloud blue complexion. And he spoke to them, and he said that, "You are in so much anxiety. I came to you. I saw you there, and I came to you. And when you were free from your anxiety, I left. But now you have even more anxiety. So now I'm coming to give you some satisfaction." And so in this way, he gave them darshan in the dream to both Narottam and Srinivas simultaneously. On another time, Raghava Pandit took Srinivas and Narottam to this small hill called Krishnakundatala. And from this hill, Krishnakundatala, they could see this village of Maghira village and the Tanera forest, which is one place where Radha and Krishna would come and have their pastimes. And there was one one, I couldn't remember the whole thing, but when Narottam Das came back to Navadvip, he started for Navadvip, and he was always had the memory of Lord Gaurasundara in his mind. And he arrived at the outskirts of Navadvip, and he started remembering, this is the place of Gaur's pastimes, and this is the place where all the residents engaged in Sankirtan, and this is where all the festivals took place, each and every day in each and every house. And he just started remembering all of this. And during that time, during the manifest time of Lord Chaitanya, you could not find an unhappy person in the whole of Navadvip, because every day everyone was seeing Lord Chaitanya. So who could be unhappy, you see? So he began to lament that his own birth was such a misfortune for him, because he was not born at the time of Chaitanya's Leela, and therefore he was deprived. He felt deprived of having to have that direct experience. So while he was thinking like this, he became overcome with this feeling, kind of this transcendental misery, and he was shedding tears. And as he entered Navadvip, he felt some kind of an enchantment. And somehow or other, the whole scenario was kind of there that he could see in a sort of mystical way. He could, even though it was past, Lord Chaitanya had taken his departure. When he entered Navadvip, he was given this mystical experience where he saw everything in the same mood as when Lord Chaitanya was present. So it was, a very extraordinary situation. And there was one Brahmin who was habitually spending his time sitting under a tree. And that was a particular tree where Nimai had often played. So when he saw this, when the Brahmin saw Narottam, he thought that immediately, this must be a devotee of Nimai. And even though he was a very, very old Brahmin at that point in time, and he was just could barely tolerate the scorching heat and the desolation he was himself feeling in the absence of Mahaprabhu, when he saw Narottam, he felt cooled, as his mind, his heart, his body felt pacified. And he was attracted to Narottam's form and his beauty, his complexion, his beautiful eyes. And so he inquired, "Who are you? Where are you from?" like that. And Narottam answered him. And when Narottam, he bowed down and put his head at his feet, the Brahmin embraced him. And they sat together for some time under the tree. And the Brahmin began to tell Narottam that, he said, I cannot really adequately describe the happy atmosphere of Nadia, but even if I had four or five mouths. But somehow or other, he began to speak. And at this point in time, in the absence of Lord Gaurasundara, Nadia had become like a desert. It was just barren. There was no life anymore. And the inhabitants, the residents, they couldn't understand that, there's their situation, that Lord Gaurasundara Nimai had left and taken sannyas. It was just, the most unimaginable thing, and they hadn't recovered from it. Nowadays, they have this thing called post-traumatic stress syndrome. So this is where it originated. The origin of post-traumatic stress syndrome is when these residents of Navadvip, trying to recover from Lord Chaitanya's taking sannyas, what to speak of his disappearance. So the Brahmin was describing everything to Narottam Das, the beauty of Lord Chaitanya, and how they just couldn't bear to see him without his beautiful hair and in a kopan. It was just completely, it destroyed their lives. So he went on to say that the Nimai had actually deprived the residents of Navadvip from his sweet association. And now, he was living in, he'd gone to Nilachala, and they were just in this type of intolerable thing, and then intolerable situation, and then they get the news of his disappearance. So, you know, then you can imagine that was just, we have a saying in English, the nail in the coffin, you know. They're already just devastated. So the nail in the coffin, the thing that clinches is that they get the news that Gaurasundar has left. So ever since that point in time, they're just in this, you know, very intense state of separation. And one by one, the residents, some of the different associates of Lord Chaitanya are disappearing, adding to this intense feeling. So in this way, the Brahmin was talking to Narottam, and he compared Nimai. He said that he was comparing Nimai. He said Nimai used to sit under this tree, encircled by his friends. He said it was like the moon surrounded by stars. You know, we see on a clear night, just like last night, even beautiful full moon surrounded by beautiful stars. So he gave that, you know, beautiful picture. But he said now that memory just gives him pain. You know, so this was the situation there, and he blessed Narottam and offered him best wishes that Narottam would always remain a devotee of Nitai Chand. So Narottam's entire existence was, you could say, summarized in the verses that he wrote that we sing on the disappearance days, because he was always in search of these great personalities. Where are you? Where are you? And, of course, sometimes he would just completely faint, and sometimes the Lord would appear to him during that time when he was fainted and give him darshan through like a dream, a mystical dream. But nonetheless, when he would regain his consciousness, he would see that he was alone. So this was how he was passing his days. So today, and he was also, you know, so many beautiful songs that he had written. And I was just going to just briefly read, because Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated the songs of Narottam Das and personally translated some of them. So those purports are especially sweet, because when the pure devotee glorifies the pure devotee, then that glorification is even sweeter. So the purport by Prabhupada for the Lalasmai Pratana, which is Goranga Balite Habe Pulaka Sarir Hari Hari Balite Nayane Babe Nir. That this song was sung by Narottam Das, a great devotee and acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya in the disciplic succession coming down from Lord Chaitanya. In Narottam, he has written many songs which are recognized as authoritative by all Vaishnavas. And he has sung these songs in simple Bengali language, but the purport, the deep meaning of his songs is very significant. In this verse, Goranga Balite Habe Pulaka Sayir, one has attained the perfection of chanting when as soon as he chants the names of Goranga, who initiated the Sankirtan movement, at once there is shivering in his body. And this is not to be imitated. But Narottam Das Thakur is asking, when will that opportune moment come to us when there will be shivering of the body as soon as we chant Lord Gauranga's name? And after shivering, Hari Hari Bolite Nayana Pathe Dear, while chanting Hare Krishna, when will there be tears in the eyes? And then he says, Arkabe Nitaishan Karuna Hoibe. We are all asking about the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is supposed to be the original spiritual master. So we have to approach Lord Gauranga through Lord Nityananda, through the mercy of Nityananda. And what is the symptom of a person who has achieved the causeless mercy of Nityananda? Narottam Das Thakur says the symptom of one who has actually achieved that causeless mercy is he has no more material desire. So, Arakabe Nitaishan Karuna Hoyibe, Shamsara Bhashana Mora Kabe Tushahabe. So, the Shamsara Bhashana means that desire for a material enjoyment. And Narottam Das wonders when it will become very insignificant. You know, In our hearts, we know we want to give up this desire for material enjoyment. Even we're brahmachari or brahmacharini, whatever, we have a small space on the floor, but that's my space and we're attached. I want to enjoy that space at night for my 4 or 5 hours of sleep. You know, whatever our attachment is, whatever this desire for enjoyment, we want to give it up. But as long as we have bodies, we have to accept so many material things, but not in the spirit of enjoyment, but only to keep body and soul together. So Narottam further says, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibe Akuti, when will I shall be very eager to study the books left by the Goswamis? So Akuti means eagerness. And because Rupa Goswami is the father of devotional service, he has written a book, Bhakti Rashtramrita Sindhu, in which there are nice directions on devotional service. And then Prabhupada says, these topics are also dealt with in Chaitanya Charitamrita and other books. And we have given a summary of these directions in our book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So this is, you know, a very important book for all of us to read. New people, when they come, they should read this book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And one has to learn the conjugal loving affair of Radha and Krishna through the teachings of these six Goswamis. Narottam Das Thakur directs us not to try to understand conjugal love of Radha and Krishna by our own behavior. We should try to understand this Yugala Priti, conjugal love, under the directions of the Goswamis. As long as the mind is too much absorbed in materialistic thoughts, one cannot enter the kingdom of Vrindavan. Now, how many times have we gone to Vrindavan? We're in Vrindavan and we find ourselves annoyed by this inconvenience or that inconvenience. What is being revealed to us is our own inconvenience of attachment to materialistic desires. So here it's pointed out very clearly that Vishaya Charyakabe Shudahabe Man Kamahaba Harebo Sri Vrindavan, when the mind is completely purified, being freed from materialistic desires, then I shall be able to understand Vrindavan and the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, and then my spiritual life will be successful. So this was the purport by Srila Prabhupada and wonderful instructions from Narottam Das Thakur. So thank you very much. If any comments, corrections, or questions? Hare Krishna. Thank you.